Keith Nutter, Real 10. We were talking about this patrol on the 29th. We're on to the 30th of May 1952 and the next day. And you, this Bren gun team and Lieutenant Tony Towle had taken a position in an old trench at the bottom of Tombstone. Now, could you describe what you could see as dawn, you know, because it was daylight by now.
Yes.
We're getting on for it.
Yes, it was approaching daylight. I think this trench, it would either be on the Chinese side of Italy. I can't see us having it in the valley. I should think it ran the Chinese slope, Chinese side of Italy, which were the hill the firm base was on originally. They'd all been withdrawn.
Firm base. So retired a bit.
We retired, I suppose. As I understand it, like we'll say, Tombstone was one hill. We come down off Tombstone, and in there was, I suppose, a small valley, and then the next raising hill would be Italy, as I remember it. And we found a trench on there and got ourselves, as I say, it could have been the base of Tombstone, it could have been on Italy. I think we may have been on the Chinese side of Italy. We got in this trench, and we concealed ourselves in this trench, and we waited for first light. And we scoured the, Tony, I don't know whether he got it binocular, but he scoured all the landscape, looking around for any signs of any dead or wounded, what we could see. Because as we knew in then, we were still quite a few men missing. We knew what we'd passed through, but we just didn't know. Some of them had bypassed us as they were sort of got back to our own lines off Tombstone, and they hadn't come through us. So I don't know how many we thought. I mean, we thought there were a few missing, quite a few more than just the odd one or two. I'm quite sure we did. And so we really were looking for them. We just couldn't understand why we didn't, you know, spot them. But they must have bypassed us when they come off Tombstone, you know, and when they were wounded and made their way back. But anyway, we were in this position, and daylight approached. Tony were looking around. We couldn't see anything. We were concealed in this trench. It weren't all that deep, I don't think, but we were down, so we could just peep over the top. Most of us weren't doing any peeping. Tony were doing the peeping, and he evidently come to conclusion, you know, we couldn't see anything at all.
You had trouble. Tell me about the wireless contact, because you had a bit of trouble.
We did, you see. After Tony had satisfied himself that there were no wounded we could help or anything we could do from that position to help anybody, he then says, Riley, you know, it's getting light now. It was well into daylight. He said, we better really think about getting ourselves back to the company position. So he asked me then to call in smoke from the Royal Artillery, which we did. And the artillery sent some smoke over, but it was quite windy.
Now, tell me about, you had a problem.
Yeah, the problem arose first. Yeah, that's right. Now, they said, I only got the whiplash aerial on the old 31 set. Well, that's about a 3 foot long aerial. We were on the reverse, on the Chinese side of Italy, so I couldn't get a signal because of the screening, you see. Anyway, we always carry the old 10 foot aerial. I think it's a 10 foot one. It's all folded down and strapped onto the side of the carrying harness for the old radio. And so I thought I'd put the 10 foot one on, which I did, and I'd never used it in Korea at all. I may use it on a static place in battalion in company headquarters. I can't remember doing that, but I'd never use it on patrol, and I don't know anybody else ever has. Anyway, so we took this 10-foot one out, put it together, and I laid it basically along the top of the trench, or just in foliage, so that it wouldn't be visible to the Chinese. And we successfully got through to the artillery on that, and then we asked for smoke, as I say, and they sent the smoke over. The smoke then wouldn't thicken because of the wind, prevailing wind, so it was drifting away, and you know, so we give it a good shot, and no, it didn't seem to thicken. So then Tony Towle come to the conclusion, well, we've got to make a break for it. So he then says, right, well, what we'll do, we'll get all ready. So when I say go, we will all go. We'll break cover, and clamber up the Chinese side of Italy, over the top of Italy, and once we get over the top of Italy, we've got a bit of cover. And then we'll make our way back as quick as we can to company, well, to, I suppose, A company, the forward company then, to the battalion position. So anyway, we wait for Tony's command, and we get ready, and we go out the clappers. We're at the trench and at the top. Now, the Chinese, I think, opened fire, but, you know, honest, I'm pretty sure this is right, because there was a lot of bangs and crashes and bang wallops going on. But we just head down and away, and we were up that hill and over the top. I don't know how long it took us. We went as fast as we could anyway. And we went over the top of the hill, and none of us got hit, and we got over the top of the hill.
Chinese fire? Was it small arms or mortar or what?
Well, I think there were mortars popping off round us somewhere. I mean, I suppose it was small arms I was thinking of, cracking off. But this is something, you know, you don't really take a lot. No, you're just concentrating on getting over that brow of that hill. And we did. We got over the brow of the hill, and I suppose we got a breath back once we got over the top of, you know, on the reverse side of Italy. Then we made a way back through the paddy fields and through the minefields to the company position. And that by that time, I suppose it was into morning. I don't know what time it would be. I didn't really sure what time it got light. It could be perhaps early morning, about 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, whatever time it was. I'm not sure. But we got back unscathed into the battalion positions. The next thing I remember, really, I suppose I closed the net down once we got back in, although I can't remember doing it, but we did. I can remember then the Sergeant Major giving me, we got the old mugs on the bottom of water bottles. I can remember him giving me one of those filled with some rum. He used to have a gallon flagons of rum in the company, and he could give anybody a tot, you know, in the cold weather we used to have a tot. And I can remember him filling that with rum. He said, get this down, your boy wears that effect. Anyway, I did. And the next thing I can honestly remember, now this is shooting forward to where my experiences differ from Tony's. Next thing I can remember is waking up in my bed, in the dugout, on top of my sleeping bag or whatever it were. It could be them time we've got a little wire bed made by cable, you know. But anyway, I can remember waking up and coming out, and I can remember them then, they'd got the binoculars on what now transpires to be Tony's patrol coming back the next day. That was my patrol
fit. Went out again.
Tony went out again. Now this I can only now go from my point of view. I come out there and they got the binoculars on Tony's patrol, which was still searching, gone out again in daylight. Unbeknown to me, Tony had gone out again with another body of men to still look for wounded.
He went out with about 3 or 4, didn't he?
Tom Ensign went with him, I know, because Tom's told me this himself. He went with him, and my friend Roy McDonald went with him, stretcher bearer. I would think there were more than 3 or 4. I would think there was a section strength at least. And they'd gone out to get on to Italy again to have a look, or gone towards Italy to have a look. But evidently they come under Chinese fire. I don't know quite when, but when these binoculars they were looking at, they said there's somebody coming back on a stretcher. And I got the binoculars, and I could see there's somebody coming back with a stretcher party. They had no success in finding, I suppose by that time they knew there were two missing, Bob Guest and Lieutenant Wormhold. But they could find no sign of them, and the Chinese were stonking them then. Roy McDonald sadly got killed by a Chinese mortar, it transpired. He was the one on the stretcher being carried back.
And he was your friend?
He was my friend, yes he was.
What was he like?
Very nice boy, yep. He was a bit older than us, he went in at 21, I think, if I remember right. Yeah, he was nice. He was in my... I remember something else. I come back, the Sergeant Major gave me this rum. I went into the signal dugout, because we had a little sleeping compartment next to the signal dugout. Roy McDonald was in there, he'd been manning the telephone in there. And they told me to get Roy, he got a great with his stretcher. And I come in, and he said, I made us a draft board, Ginger. And he got a bit of cardboard, and he'd done a draft board. He'd blacked the squares black. I said, right. I said, but anyway, I said, they want you out there with the stretcher, Roy. So he said, okay, and he went out and with a stretcher. I'd forgot that, and he went out, and that was the last poor Roy went from the company position. And I went in, as I said, I'd had this rum, and I went in and fell asleep until the afternoon, I suppose, when I woke up, and when I saw him bringing Roy back. Roy was very nice. And I went, to, actually, since then, I may contact Roy's mail continued to attend come or some had come for Roy, and there was a return address on the back of one of the envelopes, and I wrote it down on a signal pad, and I've still got it somewhere. Anyway, I didn't think no more of it. I didn't think I'd go and see Roy's mum. I thought, you know, I don't want to upset her, so we'd all got our own lives to lead. I'd done nothing at all about it. And anyway, when the Queen were going to unveil this memorial in St. Paul's for the Korean War dead, I thought, well, I'll write to that address, because it'd be nice if Mrs. MacDonald knows that something's happening, and they said next to King could be invited. So I wrote to that address, and I got a phone call from Mrs. MacDonald, and she was overjoyed. And through that contact, we got an invite for Mrs. MacDonald and her two surviving sons to go to St. Paul's, and that were nice. And from then on, when I was ever in the East Coast, I used to go and see Mrs. MacDonald, and she loved it. Yeah, she did. Sadly, she died. She died 90 plus about a couple of years ago. But as recent as a few months before she died, Rita and I called in to see her. We said, don't put yourself in bed, but okay, you know, sit down. And she cooked us a meal. Yeah, she, lovely lady, lovely lady. And she got a picture of Roy there, and I'd sent a picture of the platoon off the Orwell. She had it blown up, and she got it on the wall. She loved it. Yeah, she did. So we made contact, and she was very grateful for the contact I made and all the the visits we made to her. She really did. She put great store on them, so did we. She was a lovely lady. Got all her faculties. Riding her moped until she was about 89, and then she went over to an invalid car, and she was driving down Ipswich for that. Yeah, she was a remarkable lady. And that's how poor Roy met his end. They had a service at I don't know, battalion headquarters or one of the echelons, and they said the body of the, you know, a small number of men from the company could go. And I went, and they were Roy there, sewn up in a blanket, draped in the Union Jack. The padre were there. We had a nice little service. Just a few of his friends. Forgive me, throat. Just a few of his close friends. And then last post. And then Roy went down and were buried at Poussin, which I've seen his grave. And that's lovely. Yeah, he's laying to rest at Poussin. But sad, sad, really. So it goes.
That was a patrol that obviously sticks in your.
That was my part of the patrol. Tony then, as history tells us, Tony went out with a body of men to try and find Mr. Wormhide and Bob Guest, and they were unsuccessful. They come under fire. Poor Ivor got killed, and they come back. And we didn't know anything at all then until the Chinese released the prisoners. And it now transpires, I think, as you'll find out, Bob Guest last seen Mr. Wormhold lying in the bottom of the Chinese trench. And Bob was badly wounded, as you know, and he survived, thank goodness, and he's still with us.
Now, what's the next thing you remember? I mean, the next big thing I know is when Chapman got his MC Company Sergeant Major Wilson was caught in the minefield.
That's
right. Is there
right.
Anything you remember before that? Because that's quite late. That's the 26th, 27th
yeah,
of June.
Well,
any other incidents before?
Well, the only other... No, you see, if it were just normal patrolling and nothing happened, numerous patrols went out and no contact were made with the enemy, or perhaps we were a listening patrol... And nothing was heard, and they don't stick in your memory. I mean, I really don't know. We must have done numerous patrols between.
Did you go out as far as Tombstone normally?
No, Tombstone. I don't think we would. Not. I didn't go out to Tombstone again. We may have done one to Italy for some reason or other, but I can't honestly recall another big patrol going out. It may have been section patrols going just probing forward. I don't know. But I personally can't remember another incident until, as you just said, the incident when the minefield...
Now, tell me exactly what happened. This is on the 26th, 27th of June, when a patrol led by Company Sergeant Major Wilson of B Company entered a minefield.
That's right.
Tell me exactly happened and you were doing.
Well, this was a funny situation. I didn't know quite what was going on here, because I was in C Company. C Company commander says to me, we're going to... I'm controlling the patrol. Well, it transpired it from B Company. I thought it was from A Company. He said, we're controlling the patrol from A Company forward positions. He said, I want you on the 31 set. I said, fine. So we go round to A Company, and I established myself in one of the trenches in A Company, and Major Ashton then goes in. I go the CP in A Company, and I've thought it was a patrol from A Company, but evidently it really was a patrol from B Company under Sergeant Major Wilson. Now this patrol then must have been the same procedure. I were controlling it. I must have set up the net, and they all had instructions. Wireless silence. Anyway, I didn't really know what the object of this patrol were. It could have been just a probing patrol to see what were going on the various hills, see if they could pick up any Chinese activity. But anyway, this patrol went off, I suppose, the normal procedure, last light. Radio silence was established. I were listening out on the 31 set, and I were not going to send a message unless it was to call them back. And any messages would come from them. In other words, they were the ones that were in the prime position. So they got an 88 set with them, and nothing had gone the net until that 88 set operator pressed his pressure switch, either to call for assistance of fire or whatever. Or, you know, that, so he was in charge basically of that patrol from then on, you know, as regards messages, unless I got an urgent message from the company for some reason or other. So that transpired, and it went through the night until I suppose it was approaching first light, and Major Ashton then pops his head into the dugout and said, call them back, Ginger. So I most likely then ask them for if they got anything to report. I think that was a code name. Let's see, I forget the code name for that. Nanterre, Roger, is nothing to report, which they would have said. But I would then either say, I'd either told them to come back, return, whichever the code name were for return to company positions, or I would have asked for a situation report, and then they'd have said, Nanterre, Roger, nothing to report. And then perhaps then by me, I would have known from Major Ashton's instructions to say, you know, right, come on back in, or words to the effect. And the next thing I know, I don't know how long after then it would be, the next thing I know, the pressure switch is depressed by the 88 set operator, and he said, we're in a minefield, we're all dead. And I remember distinctly the words, we're all dead. I said, don't move, freeze, stay where you are. I said, we'll get somebody out to you. So then I pop in and say to Major Ashton, they're in a bit of a mess, they're in a minefield. He said, they're all dead. That's the only message I've got. He said, go and see if you can raise them. So I couldn't raise them again anyway. So we'll assume the wireless operator was either one of the killed or one of the wounded, and he couldn't operate the set. Anyway, so then I think they said, well, get on to the battalion headquarters, get the MO up here. So the MO, I did that. I suppose I used a field telephone for that. So got the MO up here. Continued to try and raise the 88 operator to no avail. Well, then what transpired then, that Major Chapman then gets a group of A Company together. I don't know the strength because I'm in the dugout, you see, so I don't know what happened there as regards strength, but he got a group of A Company personnel, because there were only me and Major Asher from C Company there. So he gets a group of A Company, maybe a section or maybe more, and they went forward with the stretchers. Now, I don't know then. All I know is Major Chapman went into the minefield and got them out. As I understand it, the patrol were 9 strong, I think, and I think they were 5 dead and 4 wounded, or it may have been 4 dead and 5 wounded. I think it was 5 dead and 4 wounded, and they were all wounded. The MO come up.
Were you in touch with Chapman via his signaller when he went out?
No, I weren't. For some, he may have been using A Company 88 set company headquarters operator. No, I weren't. No, that then it was took over by Major Chapman, I gather, because I don't think I'd got anything more to do with the net then. I think that was me finished. That patrol was then, I suppose, and the rescue patrol were under Major Chapman, and I suppose he got his own signaller with him or his own 88 set operator with him, because I may have kept the net open. I'm not sure, but there were no more communications I can recall with the patrol or with the rescuers at all. The MO comes up. I still say in the dugout, and the MO comes in the dugout with me, and he's got his big case, and I never see so much medical tackle in there before. But then he comes in there, and he sits there waiting with me. And anyway, I think by then, because I don't get no messages back then. They know there's five dead or four dead or whatever, and the wounded are coming in on stretchers. One walking wounded comes in, we're on with the MO. He's badly shocked, I don't know his name. He's in a very bad state of shock. The MO says, where's it got you? Or where's that effect? Because we could see no real visible blood wounds. And he said his stomach. So the MO said, let's have a look. And I can always remember this. He undoes his belt. And where his trousers are bunched together at the waist, I suppose we'd be in jungle green type of thing. And so the jacket's quite thick. Where they're bunched together, where your belt goes round. Now, he'd been hit by, I think it must have been the plug of a mine. And if you could imagine a drain plug of a car being pushed into a ball of putty and then pulled out, so you see all the indentation of the threads. Well, that's just how his clothing were there. That somebody will assume it was the mine plug. And it had hit him there, and I can always remember these indentations of the threads were as clear in his clothing as if he'd been stuck in a ball of plasticine. And so the MO opened his shirt, and he'd got no bad wound there, but he'd been peppered. He got pepper wounds, like all over his chest. Now, that could have been a bad internal wound, for all I know, because I don't know. The old boy then went out and went on a jeep back to, you know, regimental aid, wherever they took him, you know, from the Ford company. Anyway, he went back. And I didn't see any of the other wounded. They were all ferried away, I suppose, in one of the either ambulance or stretcher jeeps or whatever. I come out there then, because I gather the MO had gone back with the wounded. I'd shut the wireless down, and I got to get back to C Company GPED then, which was a little way away from A Company. And they would put in the bodies in the back of the stretcher jeeps. The stretcher jeeps, I think, had got two stretchers either side in the back of a jeep. And I said, are you going back to C Company? Or he said, do you want to lift back to C Company? Or whichever, I don't know. He said, jump in the back. He said, you'll have to hold them in. So anyway, I got in the back of this jeep, and with two of the poor lads, and had to support them while we bumped over the old rough road. And they dropped me back at C Company GPED. And really, that's that patrol. Just a sad day. Five boys, yeah. And the culmination of that, going forward a lot, I went to Korea on a revisit in the year 2000.
Now, any other incidents? Were you involved in, because there were some more big patrols that happened at Operation Yarmouth, in July and August,
You mentioned taking it. That's a funny thing. You mentioned taking a prisoner. Now, I'd forgot to tell you something which I'd forgot all about until about a year ago. Now, Corporal Barker, as he was then, if you may interview him at some time, is kind of an historian of the Norfolks. He lives at Bedford. I've got his name and address somewhere anyway. But anyway, about a year ago, he wrote to he took over as chairman or something of Bedford Branch BKVA, British Korean Veterans. And he wrote to our secretary saying he knows a few people in the Wellingborough branch. And he says, worse the effect, ask Ginger Nutter if he remembers the night he took a prisoner. Oh, I forgot all about this. And then it come back to me. What happened? We were in the sandwich on this. We're going back quite a bit, you see. This was winter position. Anyway, I think I must have went out for a pee in the night. And coming up the reverse slopes of Air Hill was a Chinaman. And he hadn't got a weapon. And he kind of gave himself up to me, as I recall. And I'd forgot all about that incident. Well, I say he hadn't got a weapon. I don't think he had. And I could see he was a Chinaman. So I took him into Major Olden CP, and I'd forgot all about that incident. And so this Chinaman must have followed one of their patrols back, or one of the listing posts back, come in the gap through the wire, and it just happened. I'm having a pee, and he came and goes, the world weren't took a prisoner. I suppose the prisoner took give himself up to me. But that was a prisoner, yeah. But as you were mentioning, these other patrols. Now, I can't remember any details about it. I didn't go on any more big patrols, I know, because Minnie and me come home before the battalion. We come out late July, I should say.
Is there anything you remember then? Sort of, I mean, it's not far. It's from the end of June to, so I mean, you
That's
left
right.
2 weeks later then. Anything in those last couple of weeks?
Well, I can only remember at that time some of the early drafts that we took over from the Ulster Rifles when we first arrived. We took about 20 over, perhaps, in our company. Of course, they'd been there longer than us, so their demob date was before ours. So they were going home on one of the first drafts. And a lot of these were Cockney boys. And so they, if I remember right, this was in the position, yeah, the other side, 355, where Tony Towers Patrol started from. We got an American tent, I think, then, down the reverse side of Ariel. And so we had a bit of a, they got a few bottles of beer in and one thing another. And we had a bit of a party down there, sing-song, before they went home. And it was a real good night. Everybody enjoyed themselves. Now, I can remember that. Yeah, there was all old songs sung. And, there was some the old Ashy beer, whatever it's called. The old colour sergeant could get that. Yeah, I think we were allowed a bottle a week or something. But on special occasion like that, he could get a case of that sort of thing, you know. And we had a good little celebration down there. And that was the norm when the draft were going home. They kind of had a celebration down there, yeah.
So that's and the last thing. That,
well, then my draft comes along. Minnie and I come home, I suppose, maybe beginning of August or end of July, I'm not sure. But we come home so that...
Now, what do you remember of your... Did you have a party? I mean,
yeah, we did. The same sort of thing. I can't remember a lot about it because they were all... Beer were flowing and we had a sing-song and, we just letting our hair down and that was it. I can't remember any necessary incidents. Only a good time was had by one and all. We were very sad to leave the lads, but then again we were going home, and I'd got a camera. Roy McDonald had brought me a camera back. When, like I brought the Scotchman his whiskey, when Roy McDonald went on his R&R, I said we all knew what we wanted. I said, well, Barry Marsh is the photographer of the company. You know, he used to be the amateur photographer of the company. I said, Barry Marsh has got a Ricoh, so-and-so, so-and-so. When you do Japan, Barry said there, I forget where much, so much money. I said, here it is. Get us one before you come back. And true to form, Roy McDonald come back with me Ricoh, and I've still got it somewhere, and that's given me good service. Don't use it now, but it was a lovely old camera. So we got that, and we got odds and ends we wanted to bring home, and we come back, and we went trained, I suppose, went back and trained at wherever we were going to train, down to Pusan, night at Pusan, I think, one night, maybe two, intense, ship come in, I think it was the Empire Orwell, not the Empire Orwell, sorry, that's we went eight on that, it was the Devonshire or the Windrush, and they're both old tubs with hammocks. And one of them were going to take us to Hong Kong, then it got to swap over to the other one. So I ain't quite sure which done which part of the journey. But they were hammocks, and it was a bit choppy going from Pusan to Hong Kong. I think I was seasick again, like I were going out. We get to Hong Kong, now Corporal Minards, you know, met, and he were in charge. They were a group, not many of us from the Norfolks, they were Corporal Minards, Pete Bartram, who now lives in Australia, who Minnie goes to see, and there may have been one or two more Norfolks. Anyway, Corporal Minards were in charge. Corporal Minards said, right, we had 3 days in Hong Kong, I think, while we changed boats. But when we got on the final boat to come home, Corporal Minards said, right, he said, we'll see if we can get out of doing too much work on this boat. So he said, what we'll do, he said, you two will get a broom for you. And he said, we'll keep that broom all the voyage. So anyway, he got his full corporal stripes on. Now, me and Pete Bartram, two privates. Well, there's another incident I'm going to think about. Yeah, I'll come back to it. Anyway, me and Pete Bartram, two privates, we got these brooms. And we spent the entire journey coming home with these brooms with us. And if anybody said, what are these two doing here, corporal? He said, they're my cleaning party, sir, or whoever. And we got through the entire voyage without doing any fatigues, sleeping on deck when the sun were beautiful, when the nights were beautiful, you know, and it was super. But what I was coming back to, you said...